Ladies and gentlemen, are
you ready for the big show?
Are you ready?
You ready for the buzzer?
Go! This is the MLS Show. On the BTP Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Beyond the Pitches MLS Show. This week, we have a very special edition for you. Joining me is Dennis Crowley. He is the chairman of Kingston Stockade FC. Dennis, thanks for joining the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Excellent. Okay, so look, just to start off, for those who don't know who you are, and in turn who, you know, Kingston Stockade are, just talk us through the events that led you to go from sort of forming the company Foursquare, as it were, and becoming a tech guru, as it were, and then then founding a professional soccer team. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's probably a topic for a whole separate hour long podcast. But you know, I've been in New York about 20 years. I've been doing tech stuff for more than that. You know, since I was in high school and college, I've always been into this idea of like building things with software, and specifically building things that make cities easier to use. So, you know, Foursquare is my second company. The first one we sold to Google way back in the day. Foursquare has been around, I don't know, 8 years now, about 250 employees, headquartered in New York. There's a bunch of offices around the world. And, you know, like we build products that, you know, help people make sense of all the data and interesting things that are going on in the real world. Anyway, a couple years ago, you know, my wife and I, in addition to living in the city, we have a house that's about 2 hours outside in an area called the Hudson Valley, 2 hours north of the city. We were sitting around one day with some buddies being like, you know, it would be a great thing to do on a Saturday afternoon is go see a match up here. And, you know, I was playing pickup up there. I knew that there were great players, but there was, you know, if you want to see a match, you had to drive into New York City. And so we thought like, hey, why don't we just start a team and put the team up here and let's see how it does. You know, it's like kind of just like building all the other stuff we've ever built, except instead of it being software for phones, this time it's, you know, a soccer team in a small town. And then we just kind of got to work doing it. And here we are 2 seasons in, and team's been doing phenomenally well. The season's over now, but we won our conference championship this year.
And
with, you know, the people love the story. We had our attendance record. We broke it 3 times this season. We had 1,400 fans at one of our matches this year. And, you know, now we're starting to think big about, like, what are the things that we can do to, you know, what can our little club do to help soccer all throughout the U.S. in the lower levels? And what role can we play helping to shape what the overall pyramid looks like, you know, for the U.S. soccer pyramid going forward?
It's funny that you say you founded the team because you thought it would be a great thing to do, just to have a team to watch on a Saturday afternoon. That's like the ultimate fan thing to do. You know, bring the soccer to where you're at. You know, it's really impressive what you guys are doing.
It's funny. It's like it's kind of the joke between the owners in the, you know, of the league that we're in. You know, we're in a league called the NPSL.
Yeah.
It's, you know, what's known as Division IV in the U.S. There's 96 teams nationally. Anyway, all the owners kind of joke like, hey, we all started these teams so we'd have a match to watch on the weekends. But you get so busy running the teams, you never get to watch the matches. so, you know, that's why the away games are so sweet, because there's nothing to do at away games. You just show up and get to watch. But no, it's overall a lot of work. There's a ton of volunteer effort that goes into making our club up in Kingston work. You know, maybe 30 volunteers show up every match.
Wow.
The staff is unpaid. We're an amateur team, so the players aren't paid. But you know, the league that we're in is semi-pro or pro-am. So there are some professional teams and some professional players. Mm. We just happen to be an amateur team within them.
Fair enough. Look, and so you, when you're at away games, let's say, is there a moment, or has there been a moment so far that you've managed to sit there in the stands and just sort of sit back and go, wow, I had this vision. Look at what I've created. It's arrived. It's real. You know, how proud are you of that? Like, what's that like to just be able to sit there and watch something that you devised just, you know, in your mind real quick one day and then put it into practice?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you, I had that moment about like 5 or 6 minutes into the very first match we played our first season,
right,
when I was so busy just running around making sure that, like, you know, there was water on the bench and the ball boys had their balls and the guy that was, you know, keeping the stats had a pen, you know, all the stupid stuff that you got to do. I didn't realize that, like, the stands were filling up. But, you know, we expected 200 people at our first game max, and I think like 850 showed up. And so by the time the game started, there was a moment in which I can't remember what the actual play was, but there was just this roar from the crowd. And, like, you know, all the players on the bench, on both benches, just turned around and we were like, holy cow, look at the stands. There's 800 people here. And then I was just, I just couldn't believe that, like, okay, this is going to work. And this is going to work in a big way. And then, you know, it's kind of all been, it's just been a lot of fun from there.
I just, when you were describing that moment, I seriously just had goosebumps. It was really, really cool. It's a really nice moment, you know. But just talk to me about why the MPSL. You know, why not push for something? You've made this team. It's a very small, you know, team in New York, let's say, in Kingston, New York, you know. But why did you not think, well, maybe we should push to try and make, you know, a fully professional team in the USL or the NASL? So what's the long-term plan with being, you know, in that MPSL for Kingston?
Yeah, there was a couple things here, right? You know, like I was telling you that story about how we were sitting on the porch thinking, hey, we should put a club together.
Right.
But, you know, there's another story that's tied to this where, you know, my buddies and I went to go see New York City FC versus the New York Cosmos Open Cup match.
Oh, okay.
This is in summer 2015. And I don't know if you know about the Cosmos, but the Cosmos were around forever and then they went away for a while. And then,
Beckenbauer, Pele.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they were in the Open Cup because they were, you know, they qualified through NASL. And, you know, I remember it was 10,000 people there cheering on the Cosmos. And I was like, wait, well, someone resurrected this team from the dead and now there's 10,000 people here cheering them on. I'm like, we should do this. How do we do this? And then that was kind of the spark that really got it going. And, you know, like the U.S. Open Cup in many ways kind of inspired the, you know, us doing this club. We sat down and we did a bunch of research on, you know, okay, what do the lower level leagues look like? I didn't know any of this stuff at the time, but then I read about what was going on in Chattanooga with thousands of fans showing up, what was going on in Detroit with thousands of fans showing up. I'm like, listen, there's some really cool stuff going on in the NPSL. A lot of these clubs are competing in the Open Cup and, you know, the buy-in is relatively, you know, inexpensive compared to everything else that we looked at, right? So the MPSL was about $15,000 to get an expansion team, you know, in there. I think when we looked at PDL, I think someone said it was like $70,000, you know, and when you were looking at USL, you were looking to pay millions of dollars.
Wow.
And it was expensive, you know. It's like, listen, this is a small market. Let's just see what we can do here. And so that's why we decided to go with the NPSL. And, you know, the league is just, it's awesome. It's got all these different owners and all these different markets. Everyone comes at it with a different strategy and a different take. And it's just like a really pure, authentic representation, I think, of not just the game, but like of the country. And I think that's what's so great about the league.
It certainly seems very grassroots to me. You know, in England, we have the saying jumpers for goalposts. You know, like sweaters for goalposts. Like it almost seems as though it's a very organic sort of movement. And I was actually reading something that you participated in with a few other MPSL owners the other day for Sock Takes with Nipun Chopra.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy. He's a very, very intelligent guy, Nipun. You know, so you were talking about the potential of a full season schedule in MPSL. Now, for those who are listening and don't know, the MPSL schedule can vary based on where you are because of, I guess, teams in the league, money. All that kind of stuff, right? There's a lot of variables. So you guys have a 12-game season, but you can get down in the Middle Atlantic Conference, sort of my old region of the world when I went to school in Pennsylvania, where they only have like a 6-game season. So how is this idea of a full season schedule / possibility progressing? And, you know, for people who missed it, why do you think it's a good idea for MPSL to take that forward?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, what's great about the MPSL is it allows you to test if a team will work in your market with a really low cost. You know, so I think we're running on the high end of the budget, you know, even with the unpaid players. But our budget ran about a little bit more than $100,000 last year. And this year, I haven't done the final numbers for this year yet. But it, like, you know, lets you get started. And that's like not, you know, you have an amateur team not paying the players. You're not, you know, usually not flying people around the country. You know, you can take a bus back and forth or take a van. And, you know, it's a short season. So we played, what did we play, 12 games a season? Is that right?
Yeah, 12 games, yeah.
And so, and then we made the playoffs, right?
Right.
Now, the thing that's, and that works really well for us, but, like, if, let's, you know, I think that the big picture here is, like, how do we connect our league to the league above us? And the old, and how would you move a team from Division 4 to Division 3? And the only way to really do that is, like, if we're playing on the same schedule, which means you have to play, you know, a spring season, which we already do, and then a fall season. Well, the problem or the challenge with trying to do a fall season in the MPSL is a lot of the teams are using college players. And when the college players go back to school, they're not available. And same thing for the coaches. You know, like our coaches, they all coach. They have to coach high school or they coach college, and they're not available in the fall. And so it just, it requires teams to rethink their model for how do they actually pull off a team that needs to play in the spring and in the fall. It's not impossible. It's just a different challenge for teams. And what I think will happen, you know, I think that the league will eventually move towards something like this. It might take us a couple of years to figure it out because, you know, it's just a problem that a whole bunch of teams have to figure out how to solve.
I mean, there's certainly enough teams involved with MPSL to make this work, aren't there? It seems like there's a lot of different conferences and there's a lot of different sort of regions that could be grouped together feasibly if it's done right. Am I right in saying that? Do you think that that's a possibility too? Do you think there's enough room for the conferences to maybe be expanded so you do have more games to play for each other?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of the league is the size of the league, right?
Right.
With 96 teams, you can really set up these conferences so that you don't have to travel that far. I think for teams at this level, the kiss of death is when you have to add national travel expenses. If you have to put 25 guys on a plane and fly them across the country and then put them in hotels and then feed them, like that, it gets really expensive really quickly. So if you can keep the teams bunched together, that's great because, you know, you can, the travel distances are shorter, which means the travel expenses are shorter, and, you know, maybe you can get away with only staying in a hotel for one or two games. Or, you know, we were fortunate this year that we didn't have to stay in hotels at all. So that really, really helped our budget this year. But, you know, this is like, you know, all those 96 teams, they can figure out how to do a spring season. But I think there's probably only like, you know, a quarter of them, let's say call it 25% of them, that can figure out how to do a fall season right now. And so if there's only that many teams, that means people are going to have to travel a further distance, which means the cost goes up. When the cost goes up, then people don't want to do it. So you got to figure out how to get more teams signed up so you can keep the cost low. And I think that's, you know, that's just one of the problems the league has to solve. And it's not, you know, it's not an, you know, unmovable roadblock. It just takes some time to figure out, you know, how to do that and how to get all the teams on board.
So, and just real quick on the NCAA, working with NCAA student athletes, is mm-hmm. that, how challenging is that? Not from the, you know, because they're, you know, kids, not because of that, but because from my experience from playing, you know, D3 college soccer in America, my playing, I mean, you know, mostly sitting on the bench, but still, you know, I was involved, and I know how bad the NCAA can be at, you know, managing these student athletes, telling them what they can and can't do. Have you found any sort of hurdles that you'd have to overcome with the NCAA yet, or have they been pretty easy to deal with?
We don't, you know, we don't deal with them directly.
No.
And the league is kind of designed, and when I say designed, I mean scheduled around the college.
So it doesn't clash.
College player schedules. Yeah, I mean the.
Right.
The, you know, season starts in May, and I think the players are released on like May 3rd or May 5th. And the season ends in early August, and I think the players are called back on, I think it's like August 15th, maybe it's August 8th. I'd have to look at the notes. But the season sits very nicely in there. You know, I think where you run into problems is, you know, like the way the NCAA rules are set up right now is like if you have – you know, if you have college kids on your team that are going to go back and play again in the fall, you cannot have any paid players on your team. And so, you know, our first season we had like three or four college guys, which mm-hmm. means that we can't pay any of the other guys.
Because
and this
technically
year
they would be professionals, right? Because where I was driving is, will it affect their eligibility at all playing
yes,
in the league?
Yeah, amateurs as in college students, cannot play on the on the same team as professionals. Right. And that prevents us from having a mixed roster of professional players and amateur players. Mm. And you know, I don't know if that rule will ever get changed. Like, I'm not a scholar when it comes to the NCAA rules, but that certainly makes it much harder to do the spring and fall season that we're talking about. You know, I can do the spring season with all college players or a mix of college players, right? But it's, you know, if we want to bring some professionals on, you wouldn't be able to pay them in the spring while they're playing with college students. It gets more complicated than it needs to be in certain cases, but I don't really know how to fix those rules.
No, yeah, and I can tell you that the NCAA, from, you know, judging by other sports, they're not really open to change, it seems, that, you know, or at least to me. So look, let's, if you guys are just joining us, we are talking to Dennis Crowley, chairman of Kingston Stockade FC. They play in the NPSL, and listen, it'll be on the pitch. Dennis, let's get into the bread and butter of this. You're an advocate of promotion and relegation in the US, okay? And look, yes, you are, we know, and it's great, it really is. And look, I come from a country that has had promotion and relegation for a long time. So for me personally, when I first came to America, it was odd that the US didn't have promotion relegation. It felt like the sport had been sort of Americanized to me. Do you know what I mean? To try and make it more in line with the rest of the sports in America. That was, that was how I viewed it. Now, when I first came, I was banging the promotion relegation drum saying, you can't Americanize a global game. And I was fully on board with introducing it. Now, I will admit, I'm a little bit on the fence. The only reason being is because, look, I see the benefits. And I understand what it's done for soccer in the UK, in Europe, in other countries and other continents. But I also wonder if the investment is so new and so fresh to the game in America that it would potentially fall out of the game and plunge it, sort of it being MLS, into a pre-1994 soccer in America-esque world. Do you know what I mean? So, like, as somebody who's fully in favor of promotion relegation in the game in the US, just talk to me about some of the myths that the anti-promotion relegation people will talk about and tell me why they're wrong.
Well, I mean, first of all, like, when we talk about promotion relegation, we talk about it throughout the entire pyramid. So it's not just trying to push teams into D1 where MLS occupies that space, but it's how do you take a team like Kingston and move it to D3, and then how do you move from D3 to D2? And I think it's most interesting to talk about it from the bottom of the pyramid up, because, you know, you get to the point where in order to make the sport much stronger throughout the entire country, like, you need more kids playing. And you need more people rooting for the sport. You need more fans of the sport. And I believe that the way that you do that is to put more teams in more markets. Now, you can't, you know, the MLS is not going to support 100 teams in 100 markets. But, like, can you do that through the lower levels, right? Can you have a couple hundred teams spread throughout the lower levels that occupy all of these lower markets? And then can those teams who really want a shot at moving from D3 to D3 to D2 to D1, can you incentivize them to invest in their own players, their own facilities, their own training programs, their own youth academies, their own fields, whatever it is? Like, they will invest in order to drive themselves up the pyramid. But if all the different tiers are closed, you just block off all of that investment. You know, when I talk to people about our club, not just fans, but people that are interested in the league or people that are interested in, like, sports entrepreneurship. It's like, okay, so you build this great thing, then what? I'm like, well, then maybe we'll win the league someday. Then what? Well, that's it. You don't move up. There's no share. There's no bigger growth. There's no bigger opportunity. And no, not based off of merit. You know, if we wanted to write a check as for an expansion, expansion league fee to move ourselves up to D3 or D2, then we could do that. Right. But it's certainly not based off of, you know, the merit that's earned by investing in our own infrastructure, in the community, and in the team itself.
So it seems like a strange business model, doesn't it? In that you can invest all this money and become a successful business, but you can't grow the business. And do you look at that? See, I think your perspective is different in a good way, because I think I would be right in saying, from listening to other interviews that you've done, that you arrived, quote, late to soccer. Do you know what I mean? Like, you didn't grow up with it, sort of thing. So I feel as though, because you've come from that business world, and a lot of things you're saying make business sense to me, you know, that you see promotion relegation as a business decision rather than an emotional, hey, this is how they do it the rest of the world and in Europe kind of way. Am I right about that? Is that fair to say?
I'm not even seeing it as like a business decision. You know, like we're not in Stockade to make, you know, millions of dollars here. Like we wanted to make a club that was representative of the community, right? And then, you know, now it's like, holy cow, this is working. Like, how do we incentivize people to really, really take this seriously? Hmm. You know, it's more like an open versus closed thing, which is really what promotion relegation is, right? It's like, is the system open or is it closed? And, you know, in all the stuff that I've done before this, going to be a cheesy analogy, right? But it's all been tech and it's all been internet. And, you know, I'm old enough to know that, like, the internet used to be pretty closed before people came and opened it up with the web browser, right? And then once the web browser opened it up, amazing things happened on the web, right? I worked in the mobile space for years and years and years when mobile phones were closed. You couldn't build apps. You couldn't do any of this stuff. And then the iPhone comes along and opens it up and opens the whole ecosystem, and people just go crazy investing and building and inventing. And I have a hard time seeing how that same thing doesn't apply here. Like, you have a closed system and that does not encourage investment, does not allow the best products to rise to the top. And if you just open the system, then all of this great stuff will happen. And I think whenever you talk about any system that goes from closed to open, people get scared. Like, what happens about this? And what happens about this? And, like, you certainly have to be respectful of the people that have helped build the closed system and help build the infrastructure. You know, going back, if you like, and I'm saying this as like, you have to have respect for what the MLS owners have done over the last 20 years, right? And all the investments that have been made in the sports and the stadium and everything else. You have to be respectful for all the people that built all this mobile phone infrastructure way back in the day. You have to be respectful of what, you know, Yahoo and AOL and Prodigy and all those other companies built to make the internet happen way back when, right? But at some point, the stuff is just begging to be opened so it can flourish and it can blossom. And I think that we're in that stage right now. And I think you could get a panel of people together that would debate back and forth, like, it would be, the whole thing will collapse if we open it. And I think you'd get a whole other side of the table that would say, this whole thing will blossom if you open it. And I'm on the, you know, I'm on the camp of good things will happen if you can find a way to open the system so that teams can move from one division to the next.
Right. And it's kind of, I want to go back to what you said about, you know, the iPhone unlocked sort of the mobile space to be expanded. And now you have all these great apps like, well, you have Foursquare, you have Facebook, you have Twitter, all the apps, you have Instagram, all these kind of different things. But I think people are also very hesitant when it comes to change, because a lot of people in MLS, I think they see promotion relegation as a threat to their business, right? So I remember when my brother first wanted to go look at an iPhone, and I went with him because he was kind of, he's a bit younger than me, and I wanted to make sure he wasn't getting a bad contract out, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I wasn't interested in this new phone. I don't need my phone to have apps and go on the internet. I don't want one. And then I went and saw it and looked and saw how great it was. And that there and then, while he was demoing the phone to my brother, I just went, I think you better go and get another one of these. And I feel like that's what could happen with promotion and relegation in the US, is that once it happens, people just think, well, why weren't we doing this the whole time, you know? And that kind of brings
That's my opinion too. You know, I agree with you that people are afraid of change. And anytime you go back and look at, you know, the history of invention or progress, you know, people are afraid of newspapers and they are afraid of radio and they are afraid of TV and they are afraid of the internet and they are afraid of mobile and they are afraid of everything that comes after that. And it's as true of like tech, it's true of sports, it is true of culture, it's true of like pretty much everything. And then once you kind of break through and things get a little bit more open and democratized, then, you know, generally things start to, you know, start to grow.
Right. I mean, look, this isn't just an emotional sort of, hey, how do we get rewarded thing. You know, you guys, you have proof, studies, specifically the Deloitte report, you know, that supports your claim that it could be, you know, it could be beneficial to the U.S. soccer pyramid and U.S. soccer in general to institute promotional relegation, right? But what do you think about people who discredit it, the Deloitte report, as not credible because of the fact that Ricardo Silva of Miami FC's company commissioned it? What do you say to that?
You know, Deloitte is a very well-respected firm, and there's been hundreds, if not thousands, of studies conducted by them. And usually they are funded by one source or another. And I just don't think that argument holds much weight. you know, I think I've seen the Deloitte report in its entirety, and it's full of facts and figures that support this. And like, even if you look at it, you want to poke holes in certain, you know, certain things here and there, you certainly just cannot throw out the entire report based on the source of the you know, who commissioned it.
Right, because all things need to be commissioned by someone at some stage. Someone needs to say, hey, can you look into this for me? And Deloitte will say, yes, we will. Thank you very much. That kind of thing, you know. Anyway, yeah. Look. So, look, you're in the stockade. Miami FC 2 brought to the spotlight once again with, you know, the fight for promotion relegation. You've taken it to the court for the arbitration of sport. So how did you get together with Ricardo Silva and Sean Flynn over there in Miami and decide and say, hey, look, let's partner on this. We all believe in this. Let's be the people, the spokespeople, to take it to the court for the arbitration of sport. How did that kind of come around?
Yeah, I think, you know, the soccer space is a relatively small space, especially when you look at like all the people who are online and active online. Like we got connected through some mutual friends, and we sat down and we chatted in New York. And, you know, my philosophy has always been strengthen the pyramid by building an army of teams at the bottom and then pushing change up. And, you know, I talked to Ricardo about his approaches and, you know, and the work that was done with the Deloitte report. And, you know, we then this opportunity for the CAS filing was presented, and we both looked at this as like, hey, this is a good shot to try to affect change from the top down. You know, I wrote a big blog post about this. You know, like, we're very committed to continuing to affect change bottom up, but it also might be just as effective, if not more effective, to try to do things from the top down as well.
Right. And look, and when you read through, because one of the things that points to the filing with the Court for the Arbitration of Sport is, like you said earlier, sporting merit. You know, we mm-hmm. deserve to play for a championship, and we deserve to move up and be rewarded through sporting merit, et cetera, right? It says that in the FIFA statute for promotion and relegation. You put it in the report. I've read it. Now, it really does lend itself some arguments, some good arguments to say, I don't want to call it a complaint that you filed with CAS, but still, let's call it a complaint for, you know, lack of a better word right now, you know. So, like, but do you worry about... Claim, there you go. That's a better word. Thank you. So the claim that you've submitted with the Court for the Arbitration of Sport, and it does hold a lot of water, and I read it and I just think, you know, this makes total sense to me. But there's one part that I read and I just worry about the wording a little bit. Maybe you can just ease my mind a little bit on it. It just says that the part of the document that says technically it's when you're talking about being rewarded for continental competition. It states openly that technically any team can win the Open Cup, any team. From any division, but it is just MLS teams that tend to win it. Do you think mm-hmm. that they'll see that as, oh, the non-MLS teams can't win it because they can only improve to a certain point, as they're not, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, they can only get so far and that's their problem. They'll have to spend the money to get better. Or do you think they'll see it as, hey, maybe if we open the system and we enabled these teams to get better, that they could achieve these things?
You know, I'm expecting them to see it as the latter. You know, like, when we talk about the filing and the 24-page document, we look at it, it's been vetted by a bunch of the legal professionals. And if you compare it to what you see in the FIFA statutes, like, it really, the filing holds a lot of weight and holds up really well. You know, it's not 100%, you know, of a slam dunk, which is why that we, you know, you end up filing with CAS and you say, listen, there's enough ambiguity here. Can you make a ruling on this? Can you come down officially and say, hey, should this be mandated by, by the USSF? And if so, why isn't it currently? And if we can get it mandated, like, what does that look like? And what does the process look like? And, you know, all of us that are involved, involved in the filing, like, everyone feels that we have a very good chance at winning this and affecting change throughout the pyramid. And that's the reason to be involved in it.
Right. And that sort of leads me into what I was going to ask you next. What makes you so confident about the claim with CAS that you can exact some sort of meaningful change here regarding soccer in America and open up, you know, the pyramid in some way? Is there sort of, is this just through conversations you've had and law that you've looked at and stuff, or what exactly is it?
I'm not a legal scholar, but of the folks that we have, you know, been talking to that are, like, that, you know, a lot of folks chime in and say, hey, this is a very, very strong case here. You know, like it's you can look at it and interpret it many different ways, but it is a very, very strong argument. And in that, you know, in that instance, you take it to CAS to resolve it. And, you know, we don't know how long the process will take. Does it take a couple months? Does it take 6 months? I don't know. But we are looking to get some form of resolution from it. And we expect that it, you know, the resolution could result in the implementation of an open pyramid.
So what? Imagine for a second this goes the right way, and you know the Court for Arbitration of Sport rules that your claim is valid. Do you know exactly? And obviously, nobody knows exactly what happens after this. But do you have an idea of what happens other than just hey, the pyramid's open? Do you know? Is there slow steps to it? Does anybody know what happens past that point yet?
No, I mean this is my first time I've been involved in something like this. You know, I don't think there's any magic wand that gets waved and suddenly everything kind of magically works. I think there's a lot of negotiating back and forth and probably some discussion of a timeline and people opting into certain things. I mean, I think there's a lot of nuance that needs to be figured out. But, you know, I think one of the things that when we talk about the CAS file, we always talk about how, like, listen, this is good. This is good for the fans. Fans want this. This is good for the sport in general. This is good for competition. And eventually, it will probably be good for the financial interest of all the teams that are associated with this. And so, you know, given what we believe will be positive outcomes out of this, we would hope that the USSF would look at this and say, okay, there's some interesting things to come out of this. Let's put together some directions, some timelines, some guidance, and let's enforce it and make sure that these things, make sure these changes start happening in the pyramid. And I think that's one of the main things we're looking for is more guidance from the USSF on like, okay, how do we move to a system that's open as is directed by the, you know, FIFA's own statutes.
Have you tried to have any direct contact with the USSF over this before the CAS claim, or was that just sort of not something that a road that you felt like you should have gone down? I'm not saying that you should have, but do you know what I mean? Like, do you think it's worth even taking it to them first, or is it just you've got to go right to the CAS?
Well, it's a good question. You know, like I'm just the owner of a random D4 team.
That's right.
Not so badly. You know, like I'm not a superstar here that has all the answers to this stuff. And you know, we're not really connected to a lot of these people. You know, when we got started with this, I mean, I've been kind of an outspoken advocate for this open system since we started learning about all the different leagues and since I was scratching my head about, like, why are they not connected? Why hasn't someone figured this out yet? And, you know, like, we've been thinking a lot about, you know, what are the best ways to kind of affect change here? And I've always been thinking, like, you would just do it from the bottom up. You would just create an army of teams at the bottom, and then you would start making your own little version of Pro Rel all the way to the top. And then, you know, if you make enough noise at the bottom, then maybe the top starts to listen to you. And, you know, one of the things that we would hear in all these discussions is like, you know, it's not, you know, even if we were to make something from the bottom up, it will stop once it hits D2, or it will stop once it hits D1. And then it's like, then what's the step? And at some point, this has to get resolved. And so, you know, I feel like, you know, we spend a lot of time, I spend majority of the time that I focus on with Stockade, you know, building the club, you know, writing as much about it as I can, trying to teach other people how they can do low-level clubs, like trying to be really transparent in our numbers and our data in the hopes that it helps other teams get started. And, you know, like the involvement with the CAS filing is like, listen, we found an opportunity to do this. Like, let's make this filing and then let's see where it goes from there. But until we hear back from that, you know, I just get back to work trying to make Division IV as interesting and accessible as possible to people.
Right, and look, and I wish you guys over there at Stockade and Miami FC and everybody else involved with this the best of luck, because it's a big deal. Like you say, it's something that's been hanging around for a long time but not been resolved. And, you know, I'm glad that we're working towards some kind of resolution, at least, you know, even if it is in the long term, you know. And I'm always excited by progress, and we could actually see that soon. So immediately, though, look, what's the focus for Stockade and Dennis Crowley over the next sort of over the off season? How do you guys sort of grow in the short term there?
Yeah, So we wrapped up our season about a month ago. We won the conference championship, which is great. We have our wrap party, a little cookout that we're doing up in Kingston this weekend, where we will hand the trophy over to the local bar to keep behind the bar so everyone can enjoy it. So
awesome. That's great.
Yeah, that's I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
And then I gotta clean up my dining room table and put all the gear away from the season. I gotta go through all the receipts and do the financial reporting for the season. I'll write another big blog post about what worked and what didn't and what we expect to change in 2018.
Right.
And then, you know, my hopes is to get more involved on the NPSL side of things. You know, I'd love to find a way to, you know, like we streamed all of our matches this year, and there's a lot of teams that stream their matches. I'd love to package that up as something that people could watch on their Apple TV or on their Roku, or, you know, just watch at some at one NPSL.com/live like website or something. You know, I'd love to help a bunch of the teams get that together. And if we do that, maybe we can find some sponsorship money, and maybe that pays for all of us to upgrade our streaming equipment. You know, so there's that part of it. And then, you know, just thinking about, like, what are the things that we can do to try to increase our odds of being able to do a fall season, not this year, but in 2018. That's one of my goals for next season, is to at least make a real solid run at trying to figure out how to do that, because I think that's a really important thing for our club as well as for the league in general. And I want to be one of the teams that's able to pull that off.
All right, so you got big plans for this.
Well, I mean, for there's NPSL. Always a lot to do. Yeah, I mean, I remember last year the season wrapped up, and we thought, oh, this is great. We have like a 9-month off season, and like I feel like we wasted a lot of time, because it's like, you know, you're enjoying the fact that you didn't have to work on the club every single day.
Right.
But now I think, you know, I've taken a couple of weeks just to kind of reflect on it, and there's a lot of work to do, and you know, like we're ready to get back to work, because I think there's great things happening in D4 and we want to keep pushing that forward.
Right, there you go. Well, hey, look, you've gained yourself, I guess, would I be the UK fan club of Kingston Stockade FC? Would I be the UK supporters group on my own over here?
We already have one.
You have one?
Yeah, we made a trip to Metcalfe, a bunch of matches last year, and we met a bunch of Palace fans at a pub, and they adopted Stockade as their favorite US club. And so I'd be happy to introduce you to them. They're really good guys.
Absolutely, that would be fantastic. All right, and look, and you know, every little helps. I'm gonna go online right after we're done here. I'm gonna buy a shirt, and you know, I'm gonna get it sent to the UK. And I know it's only a little bit, but I'm doing my bit for the Stockade. That is how I feel about that. So, look, thank you very much for coming on today, Mr. Yeah. Crowley. And look, I'll be following not just the fight for promotion and relegation, but you know, I'll be following the Stockade and NPSL, and hopefully beyond as well.
This is how you grow the sport in the US. You do it one fan at a time, one podcast at a time, one T-shirt sale at a time. It takes a long time, but you multiply it by a lot of teams doing this with a lot of different people, and start to see change, and that's what we're really excited about.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dennis.
Check us out online at beyondthepitch.net. Follow us on Twitter at beyondthepitch, or find us on Facebook at Beyond the Pitch Show.